My name is Adam Lister with Tennesseans for Student Success. I serve as the president.
Yeah, okay, so maybe a short mission statement for the organization would be a good idea.
So our organization's focus is to support and promote the policies that we believe have led to Tennessee's rise in academic achievement and growth over the last several years. More rigorous academic standards, state-specific academic standards, we believe in an assessment that's aligned to those standards as an important measure. We believe in more choice within the public school system and giving parents options in where their children can go to school, and an accountability system that provides real opportunity for teacher growth, and a school accountability system that will help parents understand how individual schools and districts are preparing students for the next grade and ultimately their futures after high school.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe just a word about the genesis of the organization. Given your emphasis, how did the organization get its start?
Well, so I could give you the really long word or the kind of medium word, but just for the sake of context, in 2007, when Tennessee was given an F in Truth in Advertising by the United States Chamber of Commerce and its Leaders and Laggards report, there was kind of a come to Jesus moment with many folks across the state that we were not, as a state, being honest with ourselves, and we were not being honest with parents about the progress of our students, that ultimately we were telling students that they were being prepared for college when they were not, and that our standards were also artificially low. So not only were we misleading them about their level of proficiency, but our proficiency levels were set lower than they should. So that led to a big conversation around improving the state's academic standards. And then when you go a few years down the road into 2013 and 2014, there was a significant debate inside the state of Tennessee, and then also happening in individual states across the country around the value of rigorous academic standards and tests and end-of-year assessments aligned to those standards. And Tennessee was one of those states that had a pretty vocal argument about what that should look like. What became pretty clear to many that valued those reforms as critical to improving student achievement was that there was no entity focused on the day-to-day advocacy at the Tennessee General Assembly and then communicating to parents and folks in communities across the state that these priorities were both important and worthy of defense. And that's ultimately what led to the creation of this organization, was there was a recognition that somebody or something needed to stand in the way of people that were advocates of the status quo and ultimately stood in the way of progress for our students.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, as I mentioned to your folks, I really wanted to focus in, if you will, for a couple of minutes on this latest report from the state that designates schools, either as high performing or low performing. I guess first, I'd just like to hear your thoughts on how valuable you think those designations are. Is it at all helpful, or is it perhaps hurtful to your way of thinking that the state is so designating some of the schools around the state, bottom 5%, top 5%?
Well, I think the ability to evaluate and measure school and district progress is critical to ensuring that every student has access to a high-quality public education. So the reality is, not issuing a report does not change whether or not students are prepared for their futures. So giving parents the opportunity to have a conversation with their community leaders about how well a district or an individual school is preparing students for their next chapter is an obligation that any local education agency or school district has for its constituency. And the idea that we would release a report that identifies schools that are in the bottom 5% is, in my view, an obligation that anybody that cares about the future of this public school system and the students that are in it must take seriously. And it's not just about identifying the bottom 5%. It's also about identifying the schools that are performing at the highest levels in the state. So by issuing this report, it really shines a light on districts that are struggling for a variety of reasons. It doesn't necessarily suggest that you are doing a bad job, but it does shine a light on areas where schools are not, or districts are not preparing their students adequately, and provides for a conversation to address the areas that need to be addressed. In some districts, that may mean that you have an opportunity to access resources or other opportunities that may not have existed prior to that designation. In other situations, like in Memphis and Shelby County, it really was an accelerant to come up with a local strategy for turning around those schools. And you saw some really great progress in their innovation zones that has taken seriously the need to address the underperformance in schools across that district. So my view is that if you believe fundamentally in accountability, and if you believe that every student in this state deserves an opportunity to get a great education, then publishing a list and telling people where students are not receiving a good education is critical, because we can't count on districts to raise their hands and say, guess what, we are not doing a good job. We know that is true because that was happening in 2007. It was happening over the last few years. And most recently, we were not having a conversation about the quality of schools, particularly in MNPS, until this report was released. So my confidence level in districts or schools to self-identify is low. And I think having a report like this is important because it gives district leaders, that even those that are serious about improving their schools, an opportunity to point to something and say, this is a moment in time and we need to take it seriously and rally around a particular issue and try to improve that as best we can.
Yeah. One of the things that critics, well, a couple of things, I guess, that critics have pointed out is kind of the arbitrary nature of looking at a percentage as opposed to perhaps some particular performance data point that would put that would assign schools to these lists. They note, for instance, that a number of the Nashville schools assigned to the bottom 5% this time got there not necessarily because you know, their scores improved or their scores got worse, but simply because Shelby County closed a number of its lowest performing schools, and you know, that same 85 schools are going to end up in the bottom 5%, and so Nashville got dropped into place there. So you know, is this to your way of thinking kind of an arbitrary and designation, and should we be looking perhaps at other metrics to judge you know, what schools need the special attention?
Well, I actually would think that argument is a fallacy and a total red herring, and it also discounts the need to take seriously the moral obligation that every community leader and school leader has to the students that are in their classroom. I was in the middle lane of traffic this morning, and I got to my office in 55 minutes. The folks that were in the left lane got here in 57. It doesn't mean that the middle lane was in some way any better than the far left lane. So I think what we need to consider is that what goes into this list is data that comes out of the state's end of year annual assessment. And that measures students' achievement, it measures students' proficiencies, and it measures their growth. And we should celebrate that Shelby County has improved dramatically in a number of ways. But I think if you were to talk to any leader in Shelby County, they would also recognize that there's a long way to go to getting their students to the place that they need to be in order to ensure a level of success that we would all think is appropriate. But again, I'll reiterate, I think anyone that would suggest that we should discount this list because it was a function of just some rank shifting based on other schools improving and others not improving as quickly as we thought is wrong. The reality is Metro Nashville Public Schools have not been educating students in the way that they need and in the way that they are obligated. And to turn the idea on its head and suggest that it's because other schools have improved more quickly is just wrong. And it's not taking seriously the need for the district leaders to wrap their arms around the very real fact that students across this district, by and large, and in particular, the ones that are the least served populations, are not receiving the education that they are owed.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you would, then I'd love to hear your thoughts with regard to MNPS in particular. You know, what is it that, to your way of thinking, to the organization's way of thinking, Nashville needs to do to turn its school system around? Obviously, it's been underperforming for some time by most any metric. So, what is it that it's going to take to see some improved scores?
Well, the first thing I would say is, as a follow-up to your previous question, is they need to be serious about actually improving the education that they provide for their students. To suggest that this is a function of rank shifting or that it's purely a resource issue absolves the district of any responsibility that they have to provide a high quality education. So until the district and other community leaders are serious about addressing this problem and recognize that this is, for all intents and purposes, a state of emergency for the city and the district, I don't know that they are going to improve what they're doing, because it's going to require people to approach this honestly and recognize that it's not going to be an easy solution and the tough decisions are going to have to be made. And we aren't going to be able to get to that point unless community leaders, and in particular leaders in the district, are honest about the situation that is facing Metro schools. And to this point, I don't believe that they have done that entirely as well as they should.
All right. I understand your point, but I guess I'm looking for some particulars here rather than just, you know, assigning blame and saying someone needs to stand up and say, yes, we have a problem. I'd love to hear any thoughts that you might have about particular solutions that perhaps you feel like the system could explore to solve some of those problems.
Well, you know, that's longer than I think we could get into in one particular phone call. I think one of the challenges that faces Metro Nashville Public Schools is that there are a lot of challenges that face Metro Nashville Public Schools. So you have a number of kids that are experiencing a significant challenge with economics. There are a number of districts that have that exact same issue. You have a lot of students that are English language learners. There are a number of teachers that require a lot of professional development opportunities. So I think focusing on teacher and principal leadership is critical. We know that a teacher is the number one determining factor in a school, in a student's success, and a strong principal is the second. So focusing on their development and addressing seriously the poverty issues that face the city, I think, are important. But I would push back to your point that it's not about assigning blame, but until we are honest about the issues that we really do face, it's going to be hard for us to get to the tactical and strategic solutions, because we have failed to this point to even have an honest conversation about the reality that this district is not performing at the level that it's obligated to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, though, I think something that you just said spoke to, you know, exactly what the point I was trying to get at. And, you know, one of the things that you mentioned as, you know, a primary driver of M&PS troubles is the fact that so many of its students are living below the poverty line. So obviously not something that the school system, you know, is responsible for, but clearly does have to respond to. So, you know, I'm curious to your reaction. To that, you've said they need to stand up and take ownership of the problem, and yet, you know, you just got finished saying that a primary driver is economics, and that's not something the school can control.
That's fair. There are also examples across the state in Shelby County in their innovation zone, and there are also schools in this district that have had success that have very similar demographics. So I reject the idea that simply because we have a district where students are stuck in situations, at least temporarily, where they're experiencing high levels of poverty, that they are destined to an underperforming district. Shelby County, by virtue of its improvement, has shown that in similar situations, they can address these issues. And I would suggest that Metro probably ought to have a tough conversation with Shelby County and figure out what are they doing. But there are also examples within this district where schools with similar demographics are exceeding and excelling in many ways. And the district could very easily walk 5 miles down the road and talk to folks in their district that are doing good work. It's not a blanket M&PS is not doing well universally. There are pockets of excellence and innovation that I think they could learn from and figure out how we can build that out as a district-wide strategy. So again, I do think it's a contributing factor to challenges and stress within a district, but it is not an excuse for failing to meet our students and provide them with an education that they deserve. And I can say that definitively because we know that that isn't a barrier universally, and there are districts and individual schools across the state that are able to have success with students that are facing really serious challenges at home.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, forgive me for pushing, but I'm glad we got those points in. That's all the questions I have, and I've kept you longer than I promised. But anything else that you'd like to get in before we stop?
No, I don't think so. I appreciate that you're talking about these issues. And you know, I said it earlier, and I mean it, that what M&PS needs more than anything right now is for people to force this conversation. And we have to have the conversation before we can begin to think about what the solutions are. And that has been the big kind of elephant not in the room, frankly, that nobody is having a discussion. And as I see it reported in the paper and in other places, that these are issues that we can address by, you know, a few million dollars or putting an accelerant on it. I think all of those things are minimizing the challenge that lay ahead. And as I mentioned, just suggests to me that people aren't taking seriously the breadth of this issue. And I worry that if we don't have an honest conversation about where this district is, then we're not going to have real substantive improvement for students. And that's the real loss there, in my opinion.